The recycling truck pulls onto your street. Your newspapers and magazines are picked up and exchange. You get rolls of toilet paper. Toilet paper! Not a bad idea. That's the way it's done in Japan, according to Leonard Corin, author of 283 Useful Ideas from Japan. He's written a book aimed at Western entrepreneurs or just those curious to see how things are done in consumer-oriented Japan. His book is laid out in the style of a graphic comic book with captions and descriptions. These drawings are by a Tokyo-based illustrator. Corin and his Japanese wife live part-time in Tokyo and part-time in San Francisco. Corin divides his book into four sections: products, services, marketing, and communications. One provocative idea from the service section is the capsule hotel. These hotels consist of stacked Pullman-style sleeping compartments equipped with a television, radio, alarm clock, and a small shelf. I ask Corin how the more compact than cozy capsule hotels reflect a certain way of life.
Well, the way of life is called very little space, and what there is, very little physical space, and what there is very expensive. So actually, if you're inebriated and it's late at night, the trains have stopped running and it's going to cost you $50 to take a cab home, you might as well spend $30 and sleep in a little capsule hotel not so far from your office. It has all the amenities you need. It looks strange to Westerners because it reminds us of a coffin, but of course, Japanese... they burn people when they die, so they don't have the same associations. Think of it more as a large bathtub with a bed and a lid.
Have you stayed overnight in one of these capsule hotels?
No, but I keep threatening my wife that I will when we get into arguments.
You've worked as an architect and a designer. And I'm wondering how you run this sort of trans-Pacific life between Tokyo and San Francisco. Do you have an architectural practice in both cities?
No. Actually, I was trained as an architect, but most of my professional life has been spent in the publishing world. First, I was a publisher of a cult underground magazine called Wet, the magazine of gourmet bathing. And I work as a magazine consultant in a book packager, mainly for Japanese magazines, and a book packager mainly here in the United States. And books are rather portable objects. You could do them any place you are. So it doesn't really make any difference where we are.
What kind of ideas are you able to bring to the Japanese as a magazine consultant? Do you have a similar set of useful ideas from this country that you're able to take there?
Well, culturally, everything that happens in the United States ultimately of... becomes manifest in Japan too, anywhere from 3 to 5 to 7 years later. So I could see trends for magazines that are needed. Let's say, like in the medical sphere, patient empowerment, magazines that help people take care of their own health. In Japan, it's kind of taboo to ask a doctor in too detail about your body condition. You're supposed to submit to him. It's a kind of master-patient relationship. And in this country, it's more like going to a mechanic. You spend a lot of money to go to the doctor if you have the money, but you expect to get straight answers. So I could see certain social trends here that will eventually end up there, and plan magazines or magazine columns around that.
One thing that struck me when I've seen people talk about Japan and design in Japan is how objects are revered there in a different way than in the United States.
Well, objects as a medium of communication as a medium of communication between people has a much deeper and longer history in Japan than it does in any of the Western cultures I know of. We've all heard of the Japanese tea ceremony, which is basically a ritual about objects and how the objects are used to communicate different messages of a social nature between people. And really, that's really the paradigm for all Japanese relationships to objects. Here, you know, we think, the design of an object, the style, the fashion says something about a person. But there, I think objects make much more definitive statements of who you are. Plus, there are fewer options in Japan for self-expression than there are here because of the space, because of the cost. So objects and shopping for objects takes up a lot more psychic space, energy, and time than it does here. Whereas here, having 26 varieties of answering machines doesn't seem very significant. For some reason, in Japan, it does. With such little space, the attention to detail becomes very great. And the distance, both physical and mental, between ideas as represented in objects, seems a lot larger than it does here.
You were a founder of co-founder of the Los Angeles Fine Arts Squad that went around doing large outdoor murals. Are you frustrated by not being able to do similar large outdoor murals when you live in Tokyo, or have you sort of accommodated your way of life to one that's more compact and attentive of space?
Well, I painted large-scale murals when I was in my early 20s, and I was living in Los Angeles, which is a sprawling outdoor city geared to the automobile, and it was a response to that environment. In Tokyo, survival and thriving in that environment, actually, it's helpful if I go inside and deal with things that are of a more personal I guess, introverted interest to me. And as I get older, the joy of anonymity and the joy of privacy becomes more apparent. I'm not interested in shouting things out to society at large anymore. I'm not interested in shouting. The kind of, let's say, artistic or creative voice that I feel now is more refined and more subtle and not at all as loud as it was when I was in my 20s and 30s.
I want to get back to a couple of the ideas that are in your book. One of the food ideas in your book is that of sort of hiring a tree, taking ownership of a tree for a season, and you're entitled to all the produce that comes from that tree for the year. Is this something that you yourself do in Tokyo?
It's something we've talked about doing. Because my mother-in-law in Osaka keeps sending us food all the time to our apartment in Tokyo, we don't really have a need to do that. But we've talked about buying trees that'll eventually be made into lumber as a kind of a social investment, combining sort of a kind of a ecological awareness with a good return on our money.
How will that work?
Well, let's see. How does that work? You basically buy tree in the Japanese version of Siberia, and it might take 20 years to mature, and at the end of 20 years, they chop down the tree and they make it into lumber. So they don't have to import lumber from Oregon. And you get the money that the lumber is sold for. And it's something like a 10 or 15% per year return on your investment when figured out over the long run.
Could you also then use the lumber if you needed it?
Or is that's not part of that deal.
Uh-huh.
But it's like... money products. There are all variations of it. I'm sure there's one like that. The buying an apple tree that yields a certain crop a year, and either taking physical possession of the fruit yourself, going there and picking them yourself, having them having the farmer box it for you and ship it to you, or just getting a certain percent return on your money after the farmer markets the fruit. Those are all schemes that exist.
Well, Leonard Korn, I want to thank you very much for coming in and being with us on Fresh Air today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Leonard Korn is the author of 283 Useful Ideas from Japan, published by Chronicle Books of San Francisco.